everybody. Before we start today's show, I wanted to talk to you just for a minute or two about a new partnership we have formed for the month of January, and I am really excited about it. So we've talked about having sponsors for a long time, and I think many of you had these fears that I would be on here talking about companies that were going to try and mail you underwear every month, new underwear, but still. Stamps.com, good heavens, how do those people even sleep at night? Am I right? It's not going to be any of that, because I made a commitment that if we ever accepted a sponsorship, it would be with an organization that had values and goals aligned with ours. And for this month, we found one. They actually found us, and I am really actually quite pleased that they wanted to work with us, because this organization was pretty instrumental in my development as a libertarian thinker, and I don't give them enough credit on the show. I am talking about FEE, F-E-E, the Foundation for Economic Education. And in the very near future, FEE is going to be hosting three-day seminars across the country with the goal of teaching young people the power of economic thinking. Now, many people in this audience might be like, don't need it, Brett. I'm already a master of economic thinking. That's awesome. But tell a young person, and if you are a young person, please listen up. If you decide you'd want to attend one of these seminars, you can expect to learn the economic principles that affect your career prospects, investment decisions, business strategies, and more. So this is for anyone between the ages of 14 and 26. And there's going to be topics such as the economics of entrepreneurship and the economics of business success. And I think this is a great endeavor for learning new methods of thinking that will help you pursue your passions. This is a big thing that we encourage on this show. So join top students, successful business leaders, and great teachers to discover the relationship between personal and social wealth, as well as the virtues of an enterprising life. The total tuition cost for 3 days is only $79, which includes all meals and housing. Suck it, college. Tuition and travel reimbursement scholarships are available, and there is no charge to apply. Applications are reviewed and accepted on a rolling basis. Apply today at fee.org/students. And please let them know in your application that you heard about this opportunity through the School Sucks podcast. Let's do a show.
Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is January 3rd. Oh boy, Happy New Year. That sound effect was called Party Blower. Where were we? Oh yeah, so what is School Sucks 4.0, you ask? First of all, a little pronunciation lesson. 4.0, it's kind of like dry tech talk. So when you say this out loud, you're talking to your friends about some new thing that's happening, you want to reference this new phase of School Sucks. It is not 4.0. It is 4.0. So please take some time to practice that out loud before you speak about it with anybody else or with me, you know, maybe on a call-in show in the future or something. School Sucks Podcast 4.0. And many of you might be asking, Brett, was there a 3.0? Was there a 2.0, a 1.0, a beta? I've been listening 6 years. This is the first I've heard about .0s. The answer is no. I would say, though, that the show has gone through three distinct phases leading up to this one. And I'm going to run through those real quick, and then we're going to talk about why things are moving in a slightly new direction, but still in familiar territory. Our mission hasn't changed. Our vision hasn't changed. We're just going to be doing things a little bit differently in 2016. Throughout the year, I collected listener feedback in the form of surveys done early on in the year, checking in with the Facebook group, which has just been a tremendous resource, and we're going to try to make better use of that this coming year, and even some face-to-face meetings with listeners whose input I really valued. And I'm going to try and apply what I've learned to the podcast in 2016. And that will make the fourth D
distinct phase of School Sucks Podcast. Let me tell you a little bit about the first three. The first phase of School Sucks Podcast was between August 2009 and July 2011. Now, this phase could be called Brett Publicly Learns How to Podcast. But what really defined this phase was a discussion of school problems. During that time, we did several series, including A Young Person's Guide to Politics, to clear up any questions about how we would go about addressing the school problem and how we would not be focused on political solutions. And then we hit the school issue hard. We did the series The Hidden Lessons of School, which talked about the ways schools subtly teach obedience, conformity, and apathy. We moved on to a history series. I was a history teacher for a number of years, called American History Effed. Great series name. And we moved from the Hidden Lessons of School series to American History Effed to basically contrast two projects that go on in the government schools. The first one is a kind of controlled demolition of the individual. And even before that demolition is complete, I would say usually by the end of middle school, a construction project, if you will, is underway. And it is the construction of the myth of a savior in the form of an omnipotent and benevolent political state. And you're going to need it. Because, young student, what good are you without it? You are not really unique or capable or powerful as an individual, right? I mean, remember the lessons you've already learned. Later in phase one, we talked about school politics in more detail. I did a series called Children of the State that was basically some lessons from my experience working in a boarding school, working with children who were in state custody or children who had been in foster care. And the last series in that phase was called Understanding Teachers' Unions. We pursued that in the midst of the whole Wisconsin controversy, the opposition to Governor Scott Walker over what teachers should be contributing to their pensions. It was quite an ugly scene. I tried to interact on Facebook with some of the people who were participating in those protests in Wisconsin, and I had my account reported and suspended. That was a real wake-up call, end of phase one. I would say a lot of negativity in phase one. So the transition was at episode 100. That was called the Brett Sucks Podcast. It was like a bunch of silly stuff that I had cut out of the first 100 episodes. I said, we're going to talk now about what real education actually is. Here are the things you need to know to defend yourself. And we moved into a series called Discovering Doublespeak. And phase two, which I would say went from July 2011 to July 2013, I tried to actively take things in a more positive direction with the show. And I ran into some problems. First of all, that's a lot of pressure. That's serious business, folks, doing a show like that. So kind of conveniently for me, the tutoring company that I had started about 2.5 years before this, just in the fall of 2011, exploded. We had so much work, all related to the SAT. I swear, I think I tutored every single high school kid in the town of Amherst, New Hampshire. It was amazing. And the show had to go on the back burner. The show had always just been a hobby, and at that point, I had to accept the fact that I don't have time for that hobby anymore. But then a funny thing happened. At the time, I had kind of wandered away from listening to a lot of the Liberty podcasts that had been so important in my development, shows like Free Domain Radio, Free Talk Live, even Complete Liberty. And I became really hooked on this comedy podcast called Red Bar Radio. And Red Bar is an old show. It goes back to before podcasting even existed. In fact, 2015 was the 13th year of Red Bar Radio. So I just fell in love with this show. I really liked the host. I really liked his style. Maybe some of you, if you tuned into Red Bar today, it's similar to like Gavin McGinnis. That would be like a frame of reference. Maybe with a touch of Cantwell thrown in. Very entertaining. The show was much different then. And I was listening on a really regular basis. And then all of a sudden, one day, the show disappeared. And this is a show that had existed at that time for almost 10 years. And one day, I noticed there hadn't been like a new podcast in 2 weeks. I went to the website. The website was gone. And this group sprung up on Facebook called Bring Back Red Bar Radio. And the first question to answer, obviously, was what the hell happened to Red Bar Radio? And apparently what had happened is Mike had gone into business with this nefarious character. They had started a comedy club together. And this guy, whose name was Kyle,
had conspired against Mike with other people who were involved in both the Red Bar Radio show and the Red Bar Radio Comedy Club, including one of his co-hosts and his intern, a noticeably and frequently mistreated, usually for comedic effect, Iranian woman named Sahar. He had all his computer information, bank accounts, passwords, and overnight, I think in August of 2011, they shut him down. And this event, that later became known in Red Bar parlance as the takeover, happened on the day that Red Bar was supposed to go to the next level. He had Marc Maron coming to his studio to do an interview. The website was gone. He couldn't even upload a podcast. This was a major disaster. And it appeared to be the end of the show. And the story that came out was that he had gone crazy and he was difficult to work with. And nobody heard anything from Mike David for months. It was a very sad story, especially for a serious Red Bar Radio fan like me. And all of a sudden, in October of 2011, the show reappears. And then slowly, over the course of a couple weeks, I start noticing these new things. First of all, a brand new website. Incredibly sleek, beautiful new website. Tremendous improvements in the quality of their streaming video. This is when I was first introduced to Ustream. He started making highlight clips for YouTube. And during the time where he couldn't do any podcasting, he redesigned and rebuilt his entire studio. Everything about Red Bar was just bigger and better. And I realized that this was this guy's baby. This was just a comedy podcast, you know? But he had put so much into it over the course of a decade that there was no way he was just going to let it disappear as the result of a spite-driven scam. And out of the ruins, this thing just became bigger and more powerful and more popular than it had ever been before. And it was really, really inspiring to me. And I remember thinking at the time, well, like, School Sucks is the only thing that is mine, you know? That, like, I had a business, but I started it with somebody else. And it was kind of even, it's hard to explain the whole story, but it was more their business than mine. I was the vice president. It wasn't mine. I didn't have ownership over it. I didn't have creative freedom. And how much creative freedom can you really have with an SAT tutoring company and college consulting company? Not much. But School Sucks was something that I had invented and created episode by episode. And I said, what I've always wanted to do is something like that.
So by the beginning of 2012, building on this inspiration of the comeback of Red Bar Radio, I started to ask myself, how could I do something similar? And I basically said, okay, this needs to go to the next level. We are a show about education. This is not a show about school sucking. We started working on the Logic Saves Lives series. We started pursuing historical topics in new ways. I did the American Way Expanded series, which kind of paralleled Nazi Germany in the 1930s. To the U.S. in the 21st century. Richard and I did shows about the ultimate history lesson. I reached out to Dan Carlin to do a history-based episode with me. But then we also explored a number of new educational topics on things like learning styles, learning theories, intrinsic motivation. We went and visited a Sudbury school and then reported on that. And I also brought in a bunch of people to talk about parenting and home education in some new ways, something that was really neglected in the first phase of the show. So those people included Stefan Molyneux, Dana Martin, Laurette Lynn, Lenore Skenazy.
And almost everything we did in that second phase of School Sucks was live, simulcasting on Ustream and the radio. And I really felt re-energized. And during that time, the show became more popular and more visible than ever. I started making more videos. Two of them had over 100,000 views, which is a hell of a lot for us.
But it was a time of new pursuits and many new challenges accepted, and many great successes, and probably a few more failures. But that's how that goes. Unfortunately, in the background, in the summer of 2013, I realized that I was dealing with some personal issues that I really, in my mind, wanted to have had solved by that point in my life, but I had to face the fact that I didn't. And I decided it was time for a change of scenery. A change of scenery is obviously not a solution to a personal problem, but the change of scenery was really, really helpful, ultimately, in addressing and confronting the challenges that I wanted to confront. So I moved to Connecticut and I stayed with Rich and Lisa from Tragedy and Hope. And I always had a solid relationship with them since I met them both in 2010. But being able to like work with them on a daily basis was really a major, major shift for me. And as we get into this third phase of School Sucks podcast, let me just change direction slightly and tell you a little story. Every morning we would get up, we would have coffee, we would spend some time together in the office, we would talk. We would talk about what was happening in the world, we would talk about history, we would talk about people like John Taylor Gatto. I started to look a little bit more closely at the book, The Underground History of American Education, and I started this exercise of trying to humanize the school conspirators, right? So these were the industrialists and the progressives. The progressives weren't trying to ruin people's children. They were trying to, in their conception, save the world. They took a systems approach to everything. And they just had all of these philosophical blind spots, for most of them, as a result of their political ideologies or the shelter of academia. From their perspective, they were looking out at a collapsing society at the beginning of the 20th century. And they aimed to systematize and scientifically manage it, you know, for our own good. They were very thoughtful people. And then I started trying to understand, well, what did they want? And I remember one day I made a list. I think the first thing they wanted was the things or the individuals in their environment, the country, to be properly labeled. I think they wanted those labels, once applied, to be properly organized. They wanted a kind of order. And finally, I think they wanted to see, as the results of these prior steps, their vision for society manifest in reality. And then I started thinking, well, as much as those people suck, that's kind of what we all want. Our minds crave identification, organization, and realization. But what were their results? Well, we already know that's what this whole show is about. By the beginning of the 20th century, and certainly this expanded throughout the century, we had a thoroughly regimented schooling system that became increasingly dysfunctional, as people were shut away from the real world for increasing periods of time from generation to generation. They were schooled into obedience. They were schooled into conformity. They were schooled into a distrust of each other. They were schooled into a distrust of their own minds. In other words, people were schooled into the state. Most people, despite these great gifts like the capacity for reason, introspection, and ultimately understanding, become stimulus response organisms, these input-output machines. And as I looked at my life in the summer of 2013, I realized that there were still some areas where I was quite stimulus response. And I really wanted to address that. So as a result, I began a series of investigations into how I could live a better, more stable, more conscious, careful, and fulfilled life. To bring in that Viktor Frankl quote, how could I widen the space between stimulus and response? You get a little more space between stimulus and response just by knowing that quote, but how could I widen it even more, and what could go inside? So ultimately, these became the questions to answer. The first one, how can I be better organized and more productive? And the goal of that was to reduce stress and to be more present with the people and the activities that I care about. The second question, assuming that that could be put in place, was how can I become a more effective and willing learner? At the time, a lot of this could have been the result of stress, but I remember experiencing a great deal of brain fog, a real lack of clarity in thought. So how could I become a better learner? That was question two. Question three, how could I form a better relationship with myself? I had recognized that obstacles to productivity and intellectual pursuits often have emotional roots. And four, and this is a big one, how can I do better and be more connected in my relationships with others? Because that is so essential to any truly happy and fulfilled life. Now, I was in the right place to be asking these questions, interacting with Rich and Lisa on a daily basis. After I was there for just a couple of weeks, Tony Myers showed up. Things were really falling into place because they had been working at that point, probably for years, on the answers to those questions, maybe not in the same order, maybe not with the same urgency, but it all came down to this description that Rich had provided, input, process, output. The process, the widened space between stimulus and response.
Now, to obtain the answer to all four of those questions, I realized, and the people I was with were really helpful in this realization, the same steps had to be followed from each question to each answer. One, acknowledgement and identification, or input. Two, acceptance and integration, or processing. And three, intention and action, or output. This is what our minds want to do. This is all those poor progressives wanted at the beginning of the 20th century, right? When they saw all these crazy immigrants pouring into their countries and speaking other languages on increasingly crowded streets, knocking off the top hats of the upper class as they played stickball without their shirts on and sold each other fruit out of saddlebags, mounted to the sides of old mules standing in piles of their own mule poop. So you see, in the midst of this chaos, the progressives just wanted things properly labeled. They wanted those labels properly organized and put into a certain order. And as a result of those prior steps, they wanted their vision for society to manifest in reality. So I felt like one of the biggest contributing factors to the personal struggles that I was having in 2013 was stress. And I thought that stress was largely the result of being disorganized. So the first step forward in the third phase of School Sucks podcast was a series called Presence and Productivity. Rich and Tony participated, and we applied that input process output, or that identification, integration, and action three-step process to the issue of productivity. We based the series on David Allen's book, Getting Things Done, which is a five-step process, but the steps are collect and capture, process, organize, review, and do. So again, the first of those five steps is about identification. Process, organize, and review all deal with identification and integration. And step five, do, is the action. And question one of the four questions that I had asked myself on this road to self-improvement was answered. So with all this debris cleared off the runway of life, I said, what's next? A basic methodology for critical thinking. I called Gino Denning. We did four shows on the Trivium method. The Trivium, of course, also follows that three-step process using the labels grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And that was question two, answered. Questions three and four were answered out of order. Question three was better relationship with self. Question four was better relationship with others. As soon as I completed the Trivium series with Gino Denning, I got in touch with Daryl Becker, who I had met through Rich, and we did four shows on his methodology for communication, largely based on NVC, which also follows the input, process, output steps. And that was the end of 2013. And I returned to that third question, better relationship with self. I contacted Wes Bertrand, and we started working on our series, The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. Based on Nathaniel Brandon's book of the same title, and The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem, even though this takes a little ham-jiggering, essentially follows those same three steps. The first pillar of self-esteem is living consciously. The second pillar, self-acceptance. The third pillar, self-responsibility, cover the acceptance and integration step in the three-step process. And the fourth, fifth, and sixth pillars, self-assertiveness, living purposefully, and living with integrity, cover the third step, the action step. I juxtaposed that self-esteem series with another series called A Renegade History Course, starring Thaddeus Russell. And I wanted these two series to run concurrently, the self-esteem series and the Thaddeus Russell series, because at the beginning, as I planned them, and I was ultimately kind of wrong about this, I saw them both as the answers to two series about problems that we had done in the first phase of School Sucks podcast. The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem was the answer to the hidden lessons of school problems. And the Renegade History Course, which I originally envisioned as being a little bit more empowering than it was very interesting. And I was really happy with how it turned out. But I saw that as being the answer to the American History F series, which was really about deconstructing the great man theory of history. And between August of 2013 and, I guess, midway through 2014, those were the answers to those four questions. Just to review the first one, how can I be better organized and more productive? Go to schoolsucksproject.com and find our series, Presence and Productivity. Question two, how can I become a more effective and willing learner? Go to schoolsucksproject.com and find our Trivium series. Question four, how can I do better and be more connected in my relationships with others? Go to School Sucks Podcast and search the Trivium Applied, if I may be so bold, to communication. And finally, question three, out of order, how can I form a better relationship with myself? Go to School Sucks Podcast and find the series, The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem. Well, thanks, Brett. I guess all our problems are solved now. Nope, I'm not saying that. This is an ongoing process. These things need to be revisited. They need to be updated. They need to be expanded. And that is taking us into our discussion of the fourth phase of School Sucks Podcast. Thank you so much for your patience. We are almost there. And I found through recognizing the answers to these four questions and incorporating those solutions into my life, I was on a confident footing on solid ground, and I had cleared the way for the work that really needed to be done in my case, a lot of which we addressed through our series, Adverse Childhood Experiences and Resilience. And, you know, I started to think about everything that we had done since 2013, this summer. I couldn't help but ask myself, what if instead of beginning all of these processes, you know, this series of investigations into how I could live a better, more stable, more conscious, careful, and fulfilled life, into how I could widen the space between stimulus and response, what if instead of beginning that process at age 35, as I did in 2013, I had begun at age 5. Because what we were learning through all of those series to answer all of those questions was essentially a new programming language for our minds. And it's a damn shame that after 15,000 hours of schooling, our minds don't already speak that language easily and consistently. Most people's minds speak that language very selectively, but seem to suddenly short-circuit when they're presented with some of the most important topics like religion and philosophy and politics and parenting, and that's a shame. So that's where I see this project coming in, and I hope that the work we did in the third phase was not just helpful to individuals without children who are looking to improve themselves and be better autodidacts, but also parents who are trying to basically figure out what their home education environment is going to look like. The culmination of the third phase was really this ACEs series, right? But wouldn't it be just spectacular if in the future, the time, the work, the intellect, the volition, and the expression of young people was treated with just a little bit more respect? Because then that ACEs work probably wouldn't need to be done. So that's phase three. So let's talk about School Sucks Podcast 4.0. And thank you for going on that little journey with me. So as I said at the beginning of the show, over the last year, I've been gathering listener feedback. And one of the most consistent messages that I've received is that people really benefit when we delve deeply into a specific topic, when we do a series. So throughout this year, we will be organizing our content into theme months. Every month, we deal with one specific theme, like a series. But many of these themes will be revisitations, expansions, and updates on previous topics. For example, in January, we're going to be doing productivity. So I really like this idea of all of us being on the same page and all of us being focused on the same pursuit. For a long time on School Sucks, we have tried to speak to three distinct groups. The first and probably the most important was young people, actual high school and college students who are struggling to make sense of that experience. We also try to be a support system for unschooling parents who are trying to figure out what home education is going to mean to them. And finally, we try to provide resources for liberty-minded people who are interested in teaching themselves. And I think that this method of production that we're going to experiment with in 2016 is the best strategy for allowing those three very distinct groups to work together. And part of this is using that Facebook group to its maximum potential. So if you want to make a post in the group that is a question about a previous episode in this theme month, the request that we expand on a specific topic, or if you just want to share elements of productivity that have been helpful to you, please do so. And I encourage you to use the hashtag, remember hashtags, SSP Productivity Month. And this way, all of our discussions over the course of a theme month will be easily searchable well into the future. So a rough template for how a theme month will work, we're going to shoot for two shows a week, probably about eight shows in total. And I would like to incorporate more listener participation into the show. So when it becomes possible, I would like to be able to run a call-in show or at the very least a type of mailbag show every month. And I will try to be more active in the group over the course of the next year, even though I fucking hate Facebook. And another important thing, listeners and participants will also be able to determine the future direction of the show. So if you have a good follow-up for Productivity Month, even though I have the first several months already planned out, I would like to hear about it. Because there are still quite a few open month-long slots in the year of 2016. The overarching goals for 2016 are greater self-actualization and steps towards mastery on some of the topics that we've already covered in great detail. And as I've already mentioned in today's show, covering the tools of productivity and organization, that's a really great place to start. And as far as a preview is concerned for the rest of the year, I'll leave you with this. The vision of the School Sucks Project is individual, including intellectual and emotional freedom for all those who seek it. Our mission is to promote personal liberty through self-knowledge, self-education, and self-improvement. The content produced to support that mission is divided into two general categories. The first category is pro, intrinsically motivated, learner-driven education. That includes topics like developing creativity, motivation, self-reliance, self-esteem, critical thinking, productivity, and a better understanding of disciplines like history, psychology, and philosophy. The other side of the content that supports our mission is about self-defense against institutionalized schooling and all of its ugly outgrowths in society. This includes specifics like an understanding of the scientific management process still at work in America's schools in the 21st century, political corruption and the more specific outgrowths of that corruption, including things like the medicated child, zero tolerance, Common Core, the college scam, and new forms of indoctrination and mainstream media propaganda. So I'm really optimistic that in 2016, we can come together in this pursuit to know ourselves, to teach ourselves, and to improve ourselves, and ultimately to pass those lessons on to others. And I'm confident that this is the year where things are really going to take off. Thanks for listening, everybody, and take care. Hey, everybody. We like to acknowledge the people who support this show and make these productions possible with a little thing we like to call new subscriber
Geography. Yeah, there we go. Subscriber Geography Trivia. You just say a person's name and they tell a fact about where they live.
So Mexican authorities sent the settlers a small cannon. Yes. First of all, you can help us out by going to schoolsucksproject.com/AV. And for a modest monthly contribution, you get access to our bonus content section, and you will also be given the opportunity to learn a fact about the place where you currently live. And today's new subscriber is Raymond M. from Kingsbury, Texas. Hot dog. Kingsbury is in Guadalupe County. Listen to this story. In 1825, there was a man, his name was Green DeWitt, and he petitioned the Mexican government for permission to settle colonists in Texas, which at the time was part of Mexico. It was his second attempt. The first was denied. He was ultimately given permission to settle 400 respectable, industrious, Catholic families in an area bounded by the Guadalupe River, San Marcos River, and La Vaca River. The capital of this settlement is named Gonzales. That's important information. Let's continue. So as DeWitt starts to recruit settlers, some bad things happen. In July of 1826, the town of Gonzales was raided by Indians who were looking for horses. Most of the settlers fled temporarily to a nearby colony. So as a result of these raids, DeWitt gets permission to temporarily move people to a place they call Old Station. And within just a couple of months, there were 40 people living in Old Station. Now, the Mexican government had made an error in granting this land to DeWitt. In fact, they had basically double-booked him with another colony founder named Martin de Leon. They were both granted the same territory. And this starts all kinds of shit. At one point, DeWitt gets arrested on the authorization of the Mexican government due to Martin de Leon's claiming that tobacco shipped into the colony was contraband. Ultimately, as a result of these tensions, the Mexican authorities ordered that Old Station needed to be abandoned, and DeWitt had to reestablish the town of Gonzales, where the Indian raid had happened just a year earlier. Soon after, DeWitt was able to sign a peace treaty with the Karankawa tribe, and he also negotiated a peace treaty with the Tonkawa, but he was unable to reach terms with the Comanche, which a jeep was later named after. This is trivia. So even though there were no longer tensions with the Karankawa or the Tonkawa, there were Comanche raids from that point on, and it took a real toll on the settlement. So Mexican authorities sent the settlers in Gonzales a small cannon that they could use to defend themselves. And in 1830, as a result of all of this trouble, the Mexican authorities passed a law prohibiting further immigration to Texas from the United States. But DeWitt got to keep his colony, and by 1831, it was becoming successful. In 1835, near the time of the start of hostilities that would result in the Texas Revolution, DeWitt traveled to Monclova in Mexico in an attempt to obtain more premium land for the colony, but he was unsuccessful. While in Monclova, he contracted cholera and died on May 18, 1835. During the Battle of Gonzales, which followed his death, his wife Sarah and daughter Naomi cut up a dress to make a banner that said, "Come and take it," which has since become a symbol of pride for the community. DeWitt was buried in an unmarked grave, but he did get a county named after him. Not the county we're talking about, but the neighboring county of DeWitt. Holy shit.
New subscriber, geography, trivia.